Calgary.
QR Calgary is 770 CHQR AM, a Chorus Entertainment radio station.
This is Global News. I'm Joshua Azizi. There are mixed signals in Ukraine. Russia launched a new wave of attacks as the largest prisoner exchange since the start of the three-year-old war got underway Saturday. Reporter Ian Pennell is in London with the details.
This is the first wave of up to 1,000 Ukrainians and 1,000 Russians expected to be swapped over the weekend. It's the result of face-to-face meetings held last week. But meanwhile, Russia launching more attacks on Ukraine. President Trump expressing hope that this prisoner exchange could lead to, quote, something big. But the Kremlin saying there are no plans right now for another face-to-face meeting with Ukraine.
Ukraine's capital of Kyiv came under a large-scale combined drone and missile attack Saturday, with explosions and machine gun fire heard throughout the city. The new minority liberal government has a stack of crime and justice policies to implement.
Some included measures aimed to make it more difficult to get bail for those charged with violent car theft, home invasion, as well as some human trafficking and smuggling offenses. The Liberals also promised to create new criminal offenses involving intimidation at schools and places of worship, as well as online sexploitation. All the promises were made during a federal election campaign, which saw the Conservatives lean heavily on an anti-crime message. Rob Westgate, The Canadian Press.
The Blue Water District School Board in Ontario says the five people killed in a car crash Friday afternoon have been identified as high school students and a staff member. The board released a statement calling it a devastating loss for the school, local community, and the school board. Police say the victims of the crash are four teenage girls and a 33-year-old man who were all traveling in the same SUV. Ontario Provincial Police say the SUV collided with a transport truck and then crashed into a second SUV at an intersection just outside of London, Ontario. The BC teen who spent weeks in hospital last year sick with avian flu is speaking out against the planned cull of 400 ostriches at a farm in BC's interior. Jocelyn, who visited the farm with her family Saturday, says her blood is still being drawn by doctors to study antibodies. She questions why the same can't be done with the ostriches.
Do more research about it. Let the ostriches live so then research can be done.
The Canadian Food Inspection Agency maintains it has a duty to protect Canadians from avian flu and says the call will go ahead. Palestinian officials say at least 79 people have been killed in the latest round of Israeli strikes on Gaza. Reporter Marcus Moore says 9 of the dead are from one family.
More heartache south of Khan Yunis, where three airstrikes killed a pediatrician's 9 children at their home as she cared for patients at a nearby hospital. The children ranging in ages from just 7 months to 12 years old. Dr. Ala Al-Nadra's second child and husband, also a doctor, survived but suffered critical injuries.
Israel's military says it had evacuated civilians from the area. It says, quote, the claim regarding harm to uninvolved civilians is under review. And the Cannes Film Festival has awarded its top prize to a movie from Iran.
Iranian drama It Was Just an Accident wins the prestigious Cannes Film Festival Palme d'Or trophy. 3 years ago, Iranian dissident filmmaker Jafar Panahi was in prison on a hunger strike and had been banned from leaving his country. His film is a revenge thriller, and it was picked up by Neon, which won last year for Anora. In fact, Neon Films won Cannes' top prize the previous 6 years. Second prize, the Grand Prix, went to the Norwegian family drama Sentimental Value. The festival got its own film-worthy ending Saturday with a brief power outage, but the red carpet was lit up in time for the awards. I'm Julie Walker.
From the Global News Desk, I'm Joshua Azizi.
Across Canada, this is Conversations with Ben O'Hara Byrne.
Well, great to have you here. Thanks for tuning in. I woke up today to a lot of activity on social media from Bell customers saying their internet and mobile services were down. It happened to hundreds of thousands of people right across Ontario and Quebec. It's been fully restored, only took about 2 hours. It was a technical issue. The company has ruled out a cybersecurity incident as the root cause.
It blames the roughly two-hour-long disruption on a technical issue and ruled out a cybersecurity incident as the root cause. Bell says the outage began after the company did an update that impacted some of their routers and decided to roll back the update to quickly restore services. The Bell network disruption also impacted some TELUS customers in Eastern and Atlantic Canada, but services have been fully restored there as well. John Kennedy, The Canadian Press.
Now, the reason now, if you're not a Bell customer, you're thinking, okay, why does this matter to me? The reason I thought it was interesting is this is the first sort of big outage that's been reported on, talked about since that massive one in 2022 when a Rogers outage left 12 million people in this country without internet service. Basically, what they did after that is the government got the telcos, Bell, Rogers, TELUS, and others, to sit down and sign a memorandum of understanding that they would work together to provide emergency roaming, mutual assistance, and communications, mutual assistance, and to better communicate with the public and the government during an outage or, quote, an impactful disaster. Here's what the industry minister, François-Philippe Champagne, had to say at the time.
I directed them to take immediate action to improve network resiliency across Canada. I gave them 60 days to enter into a formal agreement to ensure and guarantee three things: emergency roaming, mutual assistance, and communication protocol for advising the public and government during major outage.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's what was in place if this were to ever happen again. Now, clearly, this was nothing compared to what happened in 2022. There was an update being done on some of their routers. They had a problem. They reversed it, and everything came back to normal. But the big question here was, with these new rules in place about communication, about emergency roaming, and about mutual assistance between the telcos, did any of that happen? So we thought we would check in with Ritesh Kotek. He's a cyber and tech analyst with Ritesh Kotek Consulting, and he joins me now. Ritesh, as always, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
I guess just to start at the beginning as to what exactly went wrong here, what do we know about what happened with Bell today? Because it happened all of a sudden. I mean, much of Ontario and East were out.
Yeah, and according to Bell, what's happened here is there was a network update gone wrong that essentially caused an outage. And we may remember the Rogers outage. It was very similar in the sense that when you have these updates, things do sometimes go wrong and you got to roll them back. And as a result, it took a few hours to get services completely restored, but looks like Bell customers are back up and running. But I think one of the key things here is the fact that A, it happened, B, the response, and C, were the proper protocols and procedures actually followed?
Yeah, I mean, therein lies the big one, because obviously this was a relatively temporary inconvenience compared to some of the major ones of the past. I mean, just understand, I suppose an update can trigger these sorts of things. It's always a bit of a surprise for the sort of less technical amongst us when an update crashes a system of that importance, I find.
Yeah, and just think about your own personal devices, and you're probably getting all these updates on a frequent basis from your respective app store, the Google Play store, where you go in and it's, you know, I got 55 updates because I have 60 apps. And right. Look, you think that those might be net new features. They're not. They're security updates 9.9 times out of 10. And just like your device at home, or your television, or even your fridge, depending on how sophisticated your technology is, these types of hardware that's used to keep us connected, the infrastructure, the plumbing that connects all these networks together to allow us to make phone calls, those need to be updated as well, and they'd be updated on a very frequent basis. And sometimes, just like in our own personal devices, these updates go wrong, and it's not just like an update happens. There is a sandboxed environment where these updates are first tested before they get fully implemented and pushed on what we call the production network. So there's multiple tests that occur. Something went horribly wrong here. Clearly, there's going to be a postmortem, and we're going to figure out what happened. But in the interim, those are, at a very high level, those are the issues. And yes, these updates do cause crashes.
Yeah, interesting they were able to roll it back so quickly, because I think last time we all paid rapt attention to this was the Rogers one. And clearly in that case, they had a very hard time trying to roll back whatever had gone wrong. In this case, they seem to have the troubleshooting seemed to have gone quite well, despite the fact that it was down for a considerable period of time, given how important these networks are.
Yeah, and unlike the Rogers one was the first big major outage that we faced coast to coast to coast, and the telcos, they learned from it, right? There was additional pressure from the federal government to ensure that certain protocols were followed in the event of future outages. Organizations did invest in making sure that business continuity plans and ways of getting systems back up and running with minimal disruption. So, you know, it wasn't the first major outage, and clearly we're hoping that they did learn from the July 2022 outage that Rogers faced. But even that being said, clearly something did go wrong here, and we are going to ask questions. We'll learn more. I'm sure that there'll be more communication coming out of what exactly went wrong and what steps are going to be put into place to remedy it. And there were disruptions. Businesses weren't able to transact during this time.
Right.
You know, we hear about 911 outages as well, people unable to connect, or were forced to use the satellite-based communication if their device allowed it to connect with their local 911. There's a lot more work that has to be done.
Yeah, I mean, interestingly enough, after the Rogers fiasco in 2022, the telcos got together and they sort of agreed to a memorandum of understanding with the government about what would happen in a case of an outage such as this one. Part of it was how quickly they would communicate. There was some other stuff that would allow sort of a backup or to allow to trade off each other's network so their users could find service, for instance. What's your sense of how that worked today? I suppose with the alert, as always, the first I saw of it, I'm not a Bell customer, so the first I saw of it was, you know, hundreds of people sort of posting online about what just happened to my internet connection. So I get the sense that maybe they didn't communicate quite as quickly as would have been ideal, but I don't know that for sure.
And what is quick communication, right? When it comes to this, and you got to put yourself in Bell's position as well. There's clearly an outage that happens. At that point, you know, I call it stop the bleeding. It's like trying to figure out, okay, what's going on here? Is this a bigger issue? Is this a network update? Is this something more sophisticated? Is this something nefarious? And that's kind of what you're trying to assess in the immediate and trying to stop the spread. And then once you're able to contain the incident, you got to now get a patch. In this case, they rolled back the update. Mm-hmm. And it's not like you just snap your fingers. You know, we all have called tech support and they're like, oh, you know, control, delete, or restart your computer, right? It's not that simple. When you have very sophisticated networks, you can't just bring everything back on at once. You have to phase it. Otherwise, the system could overload and you could have a much bigger problem on your hands. So clearly, I think given the time of the outage, given how quickly they were able to respond, there were protocols that were in place. But, you know, was the emergency roaming enabled, right? How quickly were they able to communicate? I did see messages on different platforms coming out from public safety organizations saying that they're aware of an outage and providing tips to their residents. So clearly there's more that has to be done. But, you know, I think that this is one of those instances where it could have been a lot worse if this was the first.
If you wrap it all up then, if we look at how, I mean, obviously, I think everyone was waiting to see what would happen the next time, even if this was a far smaller incident than what happened back in 2022. Everyone was waiting to see whether the next big outage involving a telco, whether they would follow these rules. As near as you can tell, a little bit yes, a little bit no, room for improvement.
Absolutely. A little bit yes, a little bit no, and definitely room for improvement. I think overall, they were able to identify the issue. They fixed it. Connectivity was restored. I know 2-3 hours seems like an eternity in our world, but from a technical perspective, you know, I do think that that was a positive. The fact that emergency roaming wasn't enabled, networks weren't able to properly piggyback, the fact that businesses weren't able to transact as well, clearly more needs to be done. But overall, again, we probably don't want to experience another massive nation coast to coast outage. So this is kind of one of those wake up calls to say, okay, we have this MOU. We had some parameters in place. Let's see the report card.
Right. Ritesh, as always, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Ritesh Kotek is a cyber and tech analyst with Kotek Consulting. Again, we'll see what the fallout is because, of course, there will be a postmortem here. But it's imperative that telcos follow these basic rules, right? And it appears that at least some people didn't have access to roaming or emergency service or didn't appear to have the kind of access they were supposed to have. I saw this interesting social media post from Durham Regional Police today. That's near Toronto. Bell and TELUS are currently experiencing a network outage in Durham Region that is impacting all cellular telephone devices. Our 911 center is experiencing an increase in call volume. Please don't call 911 to test your phone. A reminder. I mean, sometimes it's just automatic because your phone has gone to emergency services on satellite, but don't dial it. Don't dial it when your phone goes down. Speaking of things that could interfere with telcos, a recent period of strong solar flares is having an impact down here on Earth, and we'll talk about that after this. Don't go away.
From kegs to casks to bottle caps and beyond, every Thursday at 4:47 on QR Calgary, the sommeliers of Calgary Co-op Wine, Spirits, Beer take us on a deep dive of the striking complexities and subtle nuances of wine, spirits, and beer from around the world. Join us as we roll up our sleeves to discover what's worthy of going inside the glass.
Inside the Glass, Thursdays at 4:47 on QR Calgary, presented by Calgary Co-op Wine, Spirits, Beer. The highest standards of broadcasting. It's what we strive for every minute of the day. To live up to your expectations is our goal, our obligation. And as members of the Canadian Broadcast Standards Council, our promise is to be accountable to you, our listeners. Have a comment to make about our programming? Visit cbsc.ca to find information on the council and its codes. A message from the Canadian Association of Broadcasters and QR Calgary.
Hi, I'm Scott Reeb of Cupboards Express. Our fine quality may seem old-timey, but our style is not. Keeping up with the best of Milan, New York, and Japan, we manufacture over 2,000 door styles right here in Alberta, from timeless classics to the most on-trend fashions. Don't see what you want? We could probably make it. Check out our new Real Slim Shaker Door, a real standout.
A real standout.
Keeping right up to date since 1958. Cupboards Express.
Fairplay Wild Bird Center is your one-stop shop for all things with wings. Did you know with warmer weather here, more birds are arriving and they're creating greater competition for food? Having a variety of feeders and the correct food types will help attract different species of birds. Fairplay's Wild Bird Center has a vast array of feeders, plus a great selection of feed types available in a few sizes, including our bulk by the pound bins. Visit Fairplay Wild Bird Center, 2604 Kensington Road Northwest, or at fairplaywildbird.com.
Remember last summer's heat wave that had you wishing for refreshing air conditioning? Let Furnace Family by ATCO Home Services keep you cool this summer. Trust our expert techs and honest pricing to keep your home chilling when the summer is scorching. Ask about our best-selling Lennox models that offer optimal efficiency and cool, quiet comfort. Take advantage of Lennox's rebates up to $2,000 only for a limited time. You can count on Furnace Family by ATCO Home Services to do the job right and have your AC unit up and running in no time. The summer rush is coming. Don't wait. Visit FurnaceFamily.com to secure your spot today.
Hi, Andrew Schultz here. It's spring, or as I call it, Jiffy season, which means there's so much to do around my home. As if I don't have enough on my plate, my washing machine decided to quit mid-cycle. I opened the Jiffy app, and within seconds, I was paired with Mike, who showed up that day and had it fixed in no time. And when it comes to my spring to-do list, Jiffy is my go-to. Download the Jiffy app or sign up at JiffyOnDemand.com with the code QR25 for $25 off your first job. Jiffy, Canada's number one home maintenance app.
It's Gord Gillies for Home Instead. Speaking with Debbie Franchuk, RN and co-owner of Home Instead, she says when her clients finally discover Home Instead, they tell her, "The care you provide my parents is amazing. More people have to know what you do." It's no wonder why they refer Home Instead as the best kept secret. Now that you know the best kept secret, share it with your mom and dad. When your elderly loved one needs more care, choose Home Instead as your care partner. Visit HomeInsteadCalgary.com.
Love QR Calgary 770 and just want to let us know?
404-444-4330.
Had a take on the current topic or something caught in your craw?
403-444-4330.
Have a great story for us?
403-444-4330.
Give us a call on the QR Calgary Listener Feedback Line.
Keep it clean and we may play your thoughts on air.
The QR Calgary Listener Feedback Line. 403-444-4330.
Thank you.
is Conversations with Ben O'Hara Byrne.
Well, we were just talking about how an update mistake caused Bell's network to go down in Ontario and Quebec for hundreds of thousands of customers today. This is coming. This threat to your telecoms is coming from far above. The strongest solar flare of the year so far was detected last week. A burst of radiation that caused some radio blackouts, including in the Middle East, where they had degraded communications for a high-frequency radio system or systems in the Middle East for 10 minutes last week. Again, this was the strongest of its kind. It was an X-class, the most severe type of solar flare. And again, that kind of activity, solar activity, and what happens afterwards can really wreak havoc with stuff such as satellites, global comms and GPS, power grids, and much more. So what to expect from this one? Joining me now is Walter Stoddard, senior scientist at the Ontario Science Centre. Thank you.
It's a pleasure to be here.
People always get a little panicky, maybe that's not the right word, when we see headlines like, you know, solar storms and flares and X-flares and so on. What exactly is going on up there?
Yes, and I can understand sometimes the language can get pretty exciting. There's nothing to panic about. I think that's a good message to put out. Don't panic. What's happening is the sun is actually right now really active. There's some level of unpredictability in the sun's behavior, of course, but it does follow an 11-year cycle. So we're kind of coming down from the solar maximum in that 11-year cycle, which means there's a lot of sunspots, a lot of solar flares, and with that, there's a lot of extra energy kind of being thrown our way. And that's really what the reporting on is right now, which is good news for those who are watching for the auroras, because those respond to the extra energy thrown our way. High energy particles charge up our atmosphere and we get a beautiful show. It's also something to pay attention to for those who, well, monitor and run our power grid, who have satellites in orbit. So all of those things can be affected by all this extra energy from the sun.
Yeah, well, a solar maximum, it's, as you pointed out, it goes through an 11-year cycle. We're just coming down from one. I think we were talking about this a little while back. But what exactly, I mean, what kind of impact does it have on the infrastructure here? What is it doing to it specifically, say, to power grids or communications to, equipment and so on?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's exactly to the heart of it. And basically what you have is the sun gives us light, and within that light, the electromagnetic spectrum includes radio waves. And those radio waves, they come to us in about 8 minutes. The light we see is about 8 minutes old from the sun. And those radio waves can interfere with, well, our radio signals. You think of our phone, you think of our radio, all of that communication happens through our atmosphere. And when you have extra radio signals in the atmosphere, it can disrupt them. We can end up with more noise than the signal, and that can confuse equipment. And so we could have radio blackouts. Beyond that, though, there's also high energy particles that stream from the sun. And those particles take a little longer to get to us, but when they do, if they reach us, they interact with our electromagnetic field around the Earth. We have this protective bubble. Thank goodness for that, because it keeps it from reaching the surface. But what happens in our upper atmosphere is you can have additional current flowing, and that additional current can be a problem for electrical devices. So where there's radio waves, where there's high energy particles, you have current being generated. That current, you don't want too much of it in your sensitive electrical equipment, of course, because right, you blow fuses, you'll trip gates, and so things shut down. And so that's really the bigger problem, is when we have these extra currents showing up, like the what happened in Quebec in recent memory. The grid shut down simply because there were a series of fail safes that triggered. And so it was a good thing that those triggered. Not too much current. We don't want too much current in the system, so it shuts down. But then one after the other, until the whole grid was down. And so that's what we have to watch out for.
Yeah, I understand. In this current event, we had something happen in the Middle East. There were some communications issues for 10 minutes about on frequency radio systems in the Middle East as well. I guess a lot has to depend on where things are positioned, right? I mean, that's obviously part of this as well.
That's exactly right. Yeah, and in fact, that you really hit on it, because there's a geometry to our positioning with the sun. And just because the sun is sending out a what you might call a chronomass ejection, so extra material our way, or there's a solar flare that's flaring up, if it's not pointed at us, or if we're not going to end up turning into the path of that ejection, then it's not something that we really need to worry about. It's if it hits us. It's when it interacts with our magnetic field, when we end up with that contact.
How well prepared? I mean, I imagine this is hardly news to all those people who have to take care and protect the sort of infrastructure that you were talking about, whether it be satellites or power grids or communications infrastructure and so on. How much better prepared are we now than we have been over the years for these sorts of things?
We get better and better prepared the more that we pay attention, of course. The idea of being able to shield our electronics, to turn, certainly when you're in orbit, shielding is exceptionally important. When you look at satellites, often you see them wrapped up like they're a piece of chocolate, right? They're wrapped up in foil. And that's protective. That's protective in order to create a skin of metal around it in order to reflect radiation and energy that you don't want to be absorbing. That kind of thing is of course, standard, but also you can turn some of the systems off, and that's some of the ways in which you're able to protect when you're in orbit. You rotate systems on and off so that you're not having those spikes of power. The same thing here down on Earth. You can pay attention to what's coming our way and make sure that the grid is prepared for surges, is prepared for where there might be an extra amount of power where you can predict it. And some things happen that are unpredictable, but for the most part, we have very robust grids after a number of challenges that we've experienced throughout our history here in North America. And so we've made redundancies. We've put in extra circuits, extra systems, so that it should there be a challenge in one, there's another that can offer some support.
Right. A reminder of just the power of the sun as well. You said that we're coming down off solar maximum, so this is an act of time, but one gets the sense that this threat, this risk at least, although it was obviously pronounced in the Middle East earlier this month, that in fact it's waning a little bit. What are you looking out for now?
Well, certainly there's some predictive power that we have. As I said, it's the sun can be unpredictable, but there are cycles that we can pay attention to. As you mentioned, the 11-year cycle. Also, the sun, it rotates the same way we rotate and we get a day and night. The sun turns, and every 27 days, the face that is it, we're staring at it again. And so we can then have an anticipation. So say 27 days ago, there was some activity pointed our way. We know that if that's still an active region of the sun, it'll be pointed our way again. So we can kind of map that out on a calendar. There's some expectation that there might be some energy coming our way around May 28th, 29th. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem to be anything to scare us. But again, if you're want to capture the aurora borealis, the aurora australis, it might be a good time to watch for that. So those things end up on our calendar. You're able to look for where the maximums might come.
Well, Walter, thanks for clearing that up. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Walter Stoddard of the Ontario Science Centre. We'll head to Alberta to look into a mystery behind a mass dinosaur grave after this.
We're talking about what's the best way and the easiest way to get a mortgage. We're here with Jason Hominick. And Jason, I think the easy thing probably to do is just to sign that letter the bank's going to send me, right?
You know, the bank relies on that. And because of that, especially if you've renewed with them before, they know that and they don't offer you the best rate because they know you're just going to sign back. Never sign that first offer from your bank. If you have questions about that, you go right to my website at jason.mortgage. Contact me. I'll walk you through the process.
Hey, Dad, did you know when a village comes together, we can do amazing things?
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, like helping families have a safe place to stay and letting kids like me just be kids.
What do you mean?
I'm talking about In From the Cold. We learned about it at school. They're matching donations until June 8th.
Sounds like you've been doing your homework.
Maybe a little. We should donate.
You're a pretty smart kid. You know that?
Yeah. I know. So can we? I've got allowance money.
All right. Let's do it.
A village can open doors for families facing homelessness. Visit avillagecan.ca to donate today.
Gord Gillies here for Len T. Wong & Associates. When you're looking to buy, with Len and your team, you start the search with confidence. Right from the beginning, he'll prioritize your needs. Maybe you're looking to downsize in retirement, or maybe your heart's on a starter home that's not out in the boonies. An experienced agent like Len will understand those needs, ensuring you find the home of your dreams. Len T. Wong & Associates from Greater Property Group, the city you love and the agents you trust. Call or text Len at 403-606-8888.
Shoppers Foundation for Women's Health is challenging us all to ask, how many women have we lost because of a late diagnosis? How many women have been overlooked because so little research funding goes to women's health? How many women have felt unseen because they can't access proper care? Maybe even you. Health inequities are harming women. It's why we're working to improve access to equitable and inclusive care. It's time to make women's health visible. Get to know the facts at shoppersfoundation.ca.
Lux Windows was founded in 1969 with five people and a dream. 55 years later, our team of experts cares a whole lot about building and installing the best possible windows and doors. Because Lux is not just an Alberta-made product. We're one big Alberta-made family. Everything we are is windows and doors. A company born and bred and made in Alberta.
Hey, here's some drug-impaired driving laws, simplified. If police suspect you're driving impaired by drugs, they have the tools to arrest you. First, a roadside test. And if you fail, further testing at the station, which can lead to your arrest and a criminal conviction for impaired driving. It's not just alcohol, it's drugs too. If you drive high, there will be consequences.
Let's keep our roads safe. A message from Met Canada.
At Mountain View Sundecks, beautiful low-maintenance Sundecks are just the beginning. They're also experts in stairs, railings, gates, patios, privacy walls, pergolas, and benches. From design to completion, you can trust this 20-year locally owned family business to build the ultimate outdoor space for you.
No deposit is required, and you don't pay until the job is done.
See their dream decks at MountainViewSundecks.com and call for a quote today.
Calgary is one of the fastest growing cities in the country. And what does that mean to you? More traffic headaches.
Ah, come on. Let's go.
QR Calgary is here to help you build your most seamless journey to and from work every weekday.
In the southeast, there are multiple collisions on Stony Trail between Glenmore and Pagan.
Giving you the most up-to-date traffic snarls and how to avoid them. Truman Homes helicopter traffic every 15 minutes. Weekdays 6 to 9 a.m. and 4 to 6 p.m. only on QR Calgary.
At the end of the day, it's engaging talk that matters. You're listening to Conversations with Ben O'Hara Byrne.
Well, great to have you here. Thanks for tuning in. Here's a story that combines many of the things that I truly loved as a child: mysteries and dinosaurs, particularly. So this is a dinosaur mystery. Paleontologists have turned detective, digging into a mystery. It's a mass dinosaur grave uncovered in Alberta. Thousands of patchy rhinosaurus died at this site called Pipestone Creek almost 73 million years ago, way back, but still part of what is now Canada. The question on many minds: what were they doing and what caused the death? The BBC has been following along the team doing this digging, so I'm going to highlight their story on this. It's really well done. BBC's science editor Rebecca Morrell with some of the details.
Hidden away in a lush forest in Alberta, Canada, an extraordinary sight, perched on a ledge, is posing a problem for paleontologists. First, there's the tapping. Then, the hammering. And finally, it's worth the effort, because under these rocks are possibly hundreds of thousands of dinosaur bones.
The Pipestone Creek bone bed is paleontological gold. It's jaw-dropping in terms of its density. It is literally like a pile of bones that got buried. It is a single community of a single species of animal from a snapshot in time, and it's a huge sample size.
This valley contains the remnants of a world from 72 million years ago. The small patch of ground that's being excavated is absolutely packed with fossil dinosaur bones, from the very young to the very old. There are up to 300 per square metre. And what's here carries on through this hillside for a kilometre. Thousands of dinosaurs died in a catastrophic event. The dinosaurs are called Pachyrhinosaurus, and they roamed the late Cretaceous land in a vast herd, migrating hundreds of miles north to find food for the summer. But
they had no idea about the disaster awaiting them. After the brute force comes the delicate and painstaking work to uncover this prehistoric crime scene.
Yeah, that's a little bit of the piece by BBC's science editor, Rebecca Morell, who's been out watching this work unfold. Pachyrhinosaurus, I should get the name right, in Pipestone Creek. But she's been here in Alberta. This is all happening right here at home and trying to solve this 72-million-year-old enigma. How did these Pachyrhinosaurus or Pachyrhinosauruses die? And why did so many die in the same place at the same time? One of the voices you heard in there of the paleontologist is Emily Bamfield. She is indeed a paleontologist and the curator of the Philip J. Curry Dinosaur Museum, and she joins me now. Emily, exciting stuff.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I had no idea this place existed, and described as it has been, as this one massive site where all these members of the same species died at the same time. It's remarkable. Just how did you come across, when was it discovered?
So this bone bed, we call it the Pipestone Creek bone bed, was actually discovered in the 1970s by a high school teacher from Grand Prairie, who was just walking down Pipestone Creek, and he found the first few fossils, followed them up the valley wall, and he found the bone deposit. So this site has been excavated on and off since the 1980s by the Royal Turtle Museum from Drumheller, by the Grand Prairie Regional College in Grand Prairie here, and then finally by our museum, the Philip J. Curry Dinosaur Museum. So it is really an incredible site.
Yeah, it sounds like something unlike anything else. I mean, I've never heard of anything like it. I'm not a paleontologist, but I haven't heard of anything like it anywhere.
That's true. I've worked in a lot of dinosaur bone beds, and Pipestone Creek is truly unique for a number of reasons. One of the things that makes it so spectacular is its density. We're looking at something like 100 to 300 bones per square meter. So it is an incredibly densely packed bone bed.
Yeah, I mean, just listening to the report there, obviously it's painstaking work because there are images of you, I think, with the tapping, then with the sledgehammer, and then you, of course, you have to go about the usual paleontology stuff, which is very delicate, right?
That's right, yeah. So the bone layer itself is covered with a super hard rock. We call it the cap rock. And that cap rock actually protects... That's right, yeah. So the bone layer itself is covered with a super hard rock. We call it the cap rock. And that cap rock actually protects the bone layer. It's probably the reason the bone bed is actually preserved as well as it is. But it requires sledgehammers and rock saws and pickaxes and pry bars to get all that stuff up. And then the rock underneath it is actually fairly soft. So it's kind of nice when you get down into the bone layer. And you need the smaller tools to do that. Yeah.
And as was mentioned, I mean, you have young and old, you have sort of the whole gamut of this species there, right?
Yeah, that's right. So it is a herd of dinosaurs. And so this has actually told us a lot about the community structure of these dinosaurs. So we find babies, we find adults, we find the subadults, we find the juveniles. So this is evidence that these animals did live and move in herds and potentially had parental care. So this bone bed is telling us a lot about dinosaur biology, which we couldn't necessarily find if it was, you know, only one skeleton or two skeletons.
Yeah, tell me a bit about the Pachyrhinosaurus. I think just by the name, I think listeners will understand that it looks like a certain modern day creature as well. But tell me a bit about the Pachyrhinosaurus.
Yeah, so the Pachyrhinosaurus is a horned dinosaur. So it's a smaller, older cousin of the Triceratops. But instead of having a horn on its nose like a Triceratops, it has this huge bony mass that's called a boss. And that's truly what makes Pachyrhinosaurus, having a horn on its nose like a Triceratops, it has this huge bony mass that's called a boss. And that's truly what makes Pachyrhinosaurus unique. And actually, the species that we have in the Pipestone Creek bone bed is endemic to this region, so found here and nowhere else in the world.
Really? A Pachyrhinosaurus, I'll try to pronounce that properly at least once while we're talking. Do we have an idea, given if we go back tens of millions of years, 72 million years, do we have an idea of what, if they're only known to that part of the world, do we have an idea of what they were doing there and what might have happened, how so many died all at once?
Yeah, so the Pipestone Creek bone bed, we also sometimes call it the River of Death, and that is a reflection of how we think the herd came to be there. It's also kind of the great part of the story that sort of the BBC series picks up on. But we believe that this was a migratory herd, so on a seasonal migration, and it was a super herd. So we're talking about like potentially thousands of animals. And we believe that they got caught in a catastrophic event, which was very likely a flood. So this area of Alberta was actually prone to flooding. So Back in the Cretaceous period, Grand Prairie was actually beachfront property, if you believe that. We're right on the edge of an inland sea. And to the west of us was the mountain. So it was like kind of this coastal lowland that was prone to like storms and marine inundation. So flooding happened relatively frequently, geologically speaking here. So we believe that's probably what happened to these animals. They were in the wrong place at the wrong time, and they got caught up in a flash flood that basically drowned, if not the entire herd, then a good proportion of it.
Right. So in other words, they were migrating north for food, as animals are wont to do. And it was simply one of those, like, so basically a pretty, not easy to explain, but nothing sort of very bizarre, a flash flood, something that modern humans would easily understand.
Yeah, that's right. And in fact, it does happen to modern animals today, where you have migratory animals like caribou or wildebeest that get caught up in these flooding events. So it is something that still happens to this day.
What would a massive herd of Pachyrhinosaurus look like? How big were they?
So they were about the size of an Indian elephant, roughly 5 meters long, weighed about 2 tons. Actually, relatively moderate for a horned dinosaur, but big compared to animals around today. If you imagine a herd of like 10,000 Indian elephants, that's kind of the closest analogy that we sort of have.
I'm trying to picture the noise.
Yeah.
Now, clearly this didn't wipe out the species, right?
That's right. So we believe that there were likely other Pachyrhinosaurus of this species kind of elsewhere. But this was probably one of the major herds. So this species probably took a hit in this event.
That's really interesting. I had no idea that dinosaurs moved in herds of that size.
Yeah, and this Pipestone Creek is really the first true, like, real evidence of that. So we knew that other horned dinosaurs also moved in herds, but Pipestone Creek is really spectacular for the sheer number of animals that are potentially preserved.
Right. What do you have to do to try to sort of, I guess at this point in time, you're continuing work that's been done over decades, which is trying to extract as much of these fossils as possible, right?
That's right. Yeah. So we go back to this bone bed every single summer. So we work there for about 40 days every year. And we collect somewhere between 500 and 700 fossils every season, including big things. We got a big skull out of the bone bed last year. And every specimen has the potential to tell us something new about the species, something new about dinosaurs, and something new about the late Cretaceous period. So we'll continue to dig there as long as we're finding new things.
Emily Bamfield is with us this half hour, paleontologist and curator of the Philip J. Curie Dinosaur Museum. We're talking about a dinosaur mystery. The Pachyrhinosaurus, as Emily's been describing, was this Indian elephant-sized horned dinosaur, not incredibly large, but big enough. And apparently they would travel in large herds, and this one did. And somehow a huge herd of Pachyrhinosaurus lost their lives in what they think was a flash flood. This has been a mystery for quite some time. So there's this Pipestone Creek called the River of Death, this Pipestone Creek fossil bed that contains sort of tons and tons and tons of fossils. So this entire herd appears to have been wiped out all at once. And there's some interesting things we can touch on afterwards as to how they know that sort of other predators came and sort of found the remnants of this herd after they had been killed. And of course, now we're still trying to dig into the mystery of what happened 73 million years ago. We'll talk about that and what happens next after this. Don't go away.
Okay, so you want to know what makes Stack TV so special? Is it the stars? The buzzworthy shows? Iconic reality programs? Yes! And because every single day, we add new entertainment for you to enjoy. Stream on Monday and watch new episodes of The Day of the Jackal with Eddie Redmayne. Tune in on Wednesday and get hooked on Based on a True Story with Kaylee Cuoco. Binging on Friday? Why not stream Rick and Morty with, well, Rick and Morty? Now that's special. Stack TV has new shows streaming every day. Try it free. Applicable membership required. Restrictions apply.
Heading to the airport soon? Take the pain out of airport parking with Park2Go, offering hassle-free valet parking. Park2Go is your first-class airport parking experience. You can also have your vehicle detailed and serviced while you're away. And for some reason your car won't start? They'll even give your vehicle a free boost to get you on your way. Visit park2go.ca and save 15% on parking by using promo code RADIO.
It's Dana here from Rangeland RV with some important news. With so much trade uncertainty out there, if you've been thinking of buying a new RV, act fast. Right now, Rangeland RV is fully stocked and we have great prices. But once our in-stock units sell out, you will pay more. And remember, Alberta has some of the best camping on the planet. This summer, camp local and keep your dollars in the province. Get your new RV now while prices are at their lowest. Rangeland RV, Canada's number one Forest River dealer.
Larry from SAS Comfort Shoes, celebrating their biggest sale ever.
All our SAS shoes are on sale. Save $60 when you buy two pair at regular price or shop our big inventory clearance. Up to 50% off men's and ladies' overstocked shoes.
Excellent. SAS shoes are the only brand with six widths. And now introducing new styles by Vionic and Remonte. Hurry to SAS Comfort Shoes across from Chinook Center.
Hi, I'm Debbie.
And I'm Melanie, your fashion stylist at Something to Wear.
No matter the time of year or the event,
we've always got something to wear for you.
We have just what you need to refresh your look.
The wearable trends.
Must-have basics.
Unique finds.
And most importantly, personalized service and style advice.
All of us at Something to Wear are here to help you find the style you love.
At Something to Wear in Aspen Landing and somethingtowear.com.
And follow us on Facebook and Instagram for even more fashion inspiration.
Hi, this is Mark Trozo with Prune It Up, Calgary's premier tree care company. Calgary's extreme weather can be very stressful on your trees and shrubs. Chinooks may feel great for us, but can cause many issues for your trees. At Prune It Up, we take preventative measures year-round to care for your trees to give them the best opportunity to thrive and grow. From pruning, removals, tree shaping, and plant health care programs, look no further than us. Local, skilled, passionate, professional. Spruce it up, green it up, prune it up. We've got you covered.
Looking for the ultimate golf getaway? At St. Eugene Golf Resort and Casino, you're in charge. With their customizable summer stay and play packages, you can build the perfect experience. Starting from $379, your package includes one round for two golfers, a power cart, and one night accommodation in their beautiful resort, nestled in the scenic Cranbrook area. Stay for a night or a week. Design your dream golf escape. Book your stay today at steugene.ca.
As a business, you rely on advertising. Buying media is a partnership. When did a tech billionaire buy a product from you or support your community? Ask how business is going. The advertising landscape in Canada is in crisis. Instead of supporting Canadian companies and jobs, Canada's ad market is dominated by foreign tech platforms that spread misinformation, hate, and foreign interference. Keep ad dollars at home on radio, TV stations, websites, streaming, and news services that are Canadian-owned. Buy Canadian. A message from QR Calgary.
You're listening to Conversations with Ben O'Hara Byrne.
We're digging into a dinosaur mystery of sorts this half hour with Emily Bamfield, paleontologist and curator of the Philip J. Curry Dinosaur Museum. Emily, now that we've talked about the Pachyrhinus pachyrhinosaurus and all these bones that you found, and this idea that perhaps this large herd was all killed at once in a flood 72 million years ago, I was surprised to find, because we often think of sort of mass extinction events as being something somehow devastating to the whole area, but in fact, these pachyrhinosauruses were feasted upon by other carnivores, were they not? I mean, this seems to have been just one of those very bad things that happened to one very large herd at the same time in the same place.
Yeah, that's right. So we had an event that wiped out the Pachyrhinosaurus herd. But then we know that the carcasses were lying out long enough that scavengers started to move in. So including our Tyrannosaur from this region, the Albertosaurus, which is kind of a smaller, older cousin of the T-Rex. So they came in and they started to feed on the dead Pachyrhinosaurs. It was kind of like just a big smorgasbord for them. And as they fed, their teeth fell out and got left in the bone bed. So that's how we know the scavenging happened. On the bones themselves, we also find these scratch marks. So we know that scavengers at least started to gnaw on these dead Pachyrhinosaurs before they were buried.
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable to think that this is what is modern day sort of northwestern Alberta, right? That this was all unfolding on the very same places that we all live and work and breathe these days.
Yeah, that's right. It was a very different world back then. And admittedly, it was 72 million years ago, so a long time ago. And it's in some ways hard to imagine, but of course we do have these fossils that kind of tell the story of what this area was like back then.
What now for this work? Because as you mentioned, you've been doing this each and every summer, and obviously there's been a lot of attention with this BBC special. I think they're going to air over the weekend on it. There's been a lot of attention paid to it, but certainly I guess what they've glommed onto is this idea that the mystery perhaps has been solved, but you obviously have a lot more work to do.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, there are always questions. You know, paleontology is one of those sciences where, like, the more you find, just the more questions you get. So there's lots of questions that we are continuing to ask about how the Pipestone Creek bone bed formed, how, like, if the animals survived, the migration pattern, that's a big one we're trying to figure out, is where were they going and where were they coming from? So there's still so many more questions that we have to ask about this one species. So that's why we continue to dig there. There's more things to be found.
What about their migration? Because as you said, they're only really found in that one area, right? This species, the Pachyrhinosaurus. I guess the presumption is they were coming south to north, as many animals do, but it's hard to sort of picture that migration then, only knowing what we know now about the climate where you are.
Yeah, that's right. And so we do know that the forests up here were very seasonal. So even though it was a lot warmer back in the Cretaceous period, Grand Prairie was actually even a little further north than where it is today. So it's still, we would have had the same photo period. So it's still very dark in the winter, still lots of light in the summer. And of course, the plants react to that by dropping their leaves. And so we still have this very seasonal kind of climate overall. And that's probably what was driving the migration, was, you know, going up north for all those, you know, that northern vigor, all that lush vegetation that was coming out in the spring.
Right.
So, and we also have evidence that dinosaurs were nesting up here. We do have at least one nesting ground known from this site. So at least one type of dinosaur was nesting up here as well.
Wow, it's incredible how much they sound like, in this sense, the way you describe them, how much they sound like elephants, right? Or modern elephants to some extent.
Yep, that's right. Yeah. And of course, they're big animals and they move in large herds. So the idea that, you know, they would move to kind of find food, like eat what they could in one area and then move on. That's something, of course, that animals do today. So it's kind of how what's happening today is informing what we know about dinosaurs in the past.
Right. And move as a herd, obviously, for protection from their predators, of which you pointed out there were things bigger and nastier than them roaming Alberta back in the day.
Yep, that's true. So certainly the big Tyrannosaur, the Albertosaurus, but there was also a bevy of these small feathered raptor-like dinosaurs as well as some potentially very large flying reptiles, you know, I think like pterodactyls, you know, the size of small, like, biplanes. So there were some pretty ferocious predators around that time.
Strength in numbers and protect the young as well. It's watching the BBC, and obviously one of the reasons I saw this is because they were promoting this over the weekend, even though I'd heard of this work slightly before, but it's amazing sometimes when we think about Alberta and hearing them in that British accent say, you know, here in the forests of Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, it's amazing how much attention this gets, not always enough from within Canada, but certainly around the world, this always gets attention.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, dinosaur paleontology, it's a very public-facing science. And it, for that reason, it's a great way to get, you know, kids and young people into science, like, through the medium of dinosaurs. So dinosaurs are always popular. It's a great time to be a paleontologist. Dinosaurs have never been more popular than they are right now. You know, largely thanks to, you know, Jurassic Park and the original Walking with Dinosaurs. So it's a great time to be a dinosaur paleontologist.
Yeah, how did you get involved? I mean, you must sometimes, not to say, you know, if you do what you love, you never work a day in your life, but clearly watching some of the footage of you out there and the dog, and it all looks like a lot of fun.
It is, and the of course, the field work, so that's going out and digging things up, that's actually only a small portion of what we do as paleontologists, but it is my favorite part. So just going out, spending time in these, you know, these beautiful remote areas and getting to discover new things. Like, it's just that thrill of discovery is so incredible.
Was that the same? I obviously never went into paleontology, but as a child, mysteries and dinosaurs, those were our two favorite things.
Yep, for sure. And puzzles. You can sort of have to like puzzles as well.
Right, yeah. And toothbrushes and delicate work and patience and all those other things. Emily, congratulations. Best of luck with this. And I look forward to seeing the rest of this special. You have a BBC crew on your sort of in your midst, I know. So thanks for taking the time to talk to me tonight.
Yep, no problem. Thank you so much.
Emily Bamfield, paleontologist and curator of the Philip J. Curry Dinosaur Museum, which is up in Grand Prairie, by the way, sort of in northwestern Alberta. Incredible to think that there were these massive herds, this huge herd of Pachyrhinosaurus moving across that plain. They had these big sort of horns and so on. They look a bit like rhinoceroses, thus the name, I gather. But they had, you know, for a long time, they've been trying to figure out what exactly happened to this pack, because there's this bone bed in Pipestone Creek that is just unbelievable in its density. So they know that some massive event happened, and it wasn't kind of the meteor dropping or something. It wasn't a mass extinction event. It was a massive extinction event for this one big herd of this one species. And as Emily was pointing out, they think it was probably a flash flood. At the time, Grand Prairie, even though it's, you know, very land-based now, was actually beachfront at the time, because, of course, there was this huge inland lake up there 72 million years ago. And they think this was one of those normal sort of occurrences of a flash flood that wiped out this entire herd. And therefore, you know, afterwards, of course, the remains were there, the bones were there. And we're just learning that history now, 72 million years later. What an incredible, it's always, to me, these stories about dinosaurs and Canada and Alberta and the fossils is such an amazing thing. I get asked about this by people abroad who, you know things about Canada, but specifically know about that. It's such an interesting part of our very ancient history. And it's such a feather in our cap that we continue to do such a good job of telling that story, not only to ourselves, but to the rest of the world as well. When we return, everyone knew his name, obviously George Wendt, the actor who portrayed Norm Peterson on Cheers for many, many years, 11 years. He was nominated 6 times as Best Supporting Actor in a comedy. He passed away on Tuesday, exactly 30 years after the show stopped running back in 1995. We'll talk about his legacy and much more with the author of the official history of Cheers after this. Don't go away.
That was some party, thanks to my buddy's beer and joint. Here's the keys, joint.
Yo, I'm not driving. I'm way too stoned. How are you feeling, beer?
Oh, since we had that toke, I'm not driving tonight at all.
What about you, Dave?
You only had a couple of drinks.
And only a couple of puffs.
I don't drink and drive. No way I'm getting behind the wheel when I smoked weed, too.
How are we getting home, then?
Come on, Dave. Take one for the team.
Don't let weed and alcohol influence your decision to drive.
Yeah, I need a ride.
A message from Mad Canada.
The Cedar Shop, bringing nature to you.
Find your inspiration today at The Cedar Shop. You already know them for their cedar, but did you know they are also Calgary's largest in-stock inventory of pressure-treated lumber? The Cedar Shop is also home to Calgary's most interactive composite decking display, where you can touch and feel the end product. Ask about Cedar Shop's free in-town delivery, shop in-store, or online at cedarshop.com.
The Cedar Shop.
Gluten-free doesn't mean you have to miss out. The Cookie Jar is Calgary's 100% gluten-free bakery.
Hey, it's Devin from The Cookie Jar. We know how hard it is to manage a gluten-free diet, so we created a place where everything is 100% gluten-free without sacrificing the flavor. Have you been craving cake, bread, cookies, or pizza? Then come in for a visit and see how delicious gluten-free can be.
Visit The Cookie Jar Gluten-Free Bakery at 128 28th Street Southeast, or Google The Cookie Jar Calgary to see everything they offer.
Sometimes great pizza leads to problems, like you don't want to commit to just one kind of pizza, or maybe you want an extra slice when the pizza's done. Tom's House of Pizza has your back with their all-you-can-eat pizza buffet. Monday to Friday from 11:30 to 2, enjoy all-you-can-eat pizza and salad for $11.95 with beverage purchase. Available in the pub at Tom's House of Pizza's McLeod Trail and Okotoks locations. Unlimited slices, so much pizza to choose from. Discover the legendary lunch buffet at Tom's House of Pizza.
In a world where it's easy to get wrapped up in distractions, we need to stop and ask an important question. Will you say yes to mental health? Put down your cell phone, turn off the TV and the laptop, and just ask, what does saying yes to mental health mean to you? Is it getting yourself counseling, supporting a loved one, or donating time or money to an urgently needed mental health program? Whatever saying yes to mental health means to you, please visit woodshomes.ca and say yes today.
Overnight Expedite is here to keep your packages and parcels moving. With Overnight Expedite's XPAC mailbag service, you can ship almost anywhere in Alberta with next day delivery for just $12 plus GST. No hidden fees, no hassle. From Edmonton to Medicine Hat, from Grand Prairie to Red Deer, One Transport Group are Alberta's locally owned courier service. Overnight Expedite, proudly part of One Transport Group. Overnight Expedite. When time matters, they deliver. Visit shipexpedite.com today to learn more.
Alberta has always been good to us. Its lands have fed and nourished us. Its pioneering spirit, fueling and pushing us forward. It's a place that has what we want, what we need, what the world needs. So let's raise a glass for Alberta. From Alberta. Visit raiseaglassab.ca to support Alberta's brewers and distillers. Brought to you by AGLC and Travel Alberta.
Hey, it's Ben Mulrooney. There's a thought out there that the best time to put out bad news publicly is while other major news is breaking. Oftentimes, these are smaller, yet still important stories that get missed. Well, that's not going to happen on our show, because I've got one that I want to share and give the attention to it that it deserves, especially because it affects so many Canadians. Plus, we'll set the table for King Charles' throne speech coming up, what to expect, and what does it signal about how Mark Carney will govern.
The Ben Mulrooney Show, noon to 2, weekday afternoons on QR Calgary.
QR Calgary is 770 CHQR AM, a Chorus Entertainment radio station.
This is Global News. I'm Joshua ZZ. Russia and Ukraine have swapped more prisoners hours after a massive attack on Kyiv.
Russia and Ukraine exchanged hundreds more prisoners Saturday. It's part of a major swap that amounted to a moment of cooperation in otherwise failed efforts to reach a ceasefire. Both countries say each side brought home 307 more soldiers. This comes a day after each released a total of 390 combatants and civilians. The development also coming after Ukraine's capital came under a large-scale Russian drone and missile attack that left at least 15 people injured, according to local officials. Explosions and anti-aircraft fire were heard throughout Kyiv as many sought shelter in subway stations. I'm Julie Walker.
Israel is being accused of forcing Palestinians to act as human shields in Gaza and the West Bank.
Palestinians say that they are being used by Israeli soldiers as human shields. Right here behind me in the Jenin refugee camp is a place where Palestinians have said that they have been used by Israeli soldiers. They have said that they have had to go ahead of the soldiers into apartments. One woman went into at least six different apartments carrying a drone that the soldiers gave her with a camera on it to make sure that it was all clear before the soldiers went in after her. Now, this is happening in the West Bank, but it's also happening in Gaza. Soldiers we've spoken to who have engaged in the practice have said that they are sending humans in, sometimes instead of drones or dogs. Now, Israel's army denies that this happens. They said that this is not in accordance with practice with the army, but Palestinians we've spoken to as